going, everybody? Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Vietes Rundown. I'm your host, Manny Vietes. So I haven't done a podcast in about 2 weeks. I wanted to sit back, relax, take in the NCAA tournament, see what prospects I liked, see what young guys were doing well, and I wanted to evaluate them after. So obviously tonight we saw North Carolina take away the national championship. It was kind of a hard-fought game from both teams. It wasn't really flashy. You didn't see too many dunks, you know, crazy three-pointers. It was more of like, let's not get our big guys in foul trouble and get them fouled out of the game towards the end there with Zach Collins fouling out and with Meeks fouling out, almost fouling out as well. So in this episode, I'm going to talk about, you know, obviously the tournament and what players benefit from the tournament. And I'm going to talk about why I think that De'Aaron Fox will be drafted over Lonzo Ball and what are some reasons why I think why that will happen. I'll also touch up on the MVP race in the NBA. Obviously, it's between James Harden and Russell Westbrook right now. I'm going to give my pros and cons for that. I'm also going to give my best in the NBA this year as well, and what I think that the Kings should do with their draft pick, and what I think that the Celtics should do as well, since they'll be probably taking home that number one pick. So first off, you know, I wanted to go over I have three players who benefited very, very well from this from the NCAA tournament. It's pretty obvious that in one in particular, he definitely took home he took home most of the glory. It's Zach Collins from Gonzaga. He played a lot throughout the season. He averaged 10 points and 6 rebounds per game. But in the tournament specifically, a big reason why they even made it to the championship game was because of him. There was a couple games in there where, you know, when they had turned to him to be the primary scorer, there was basically not too many, you know, scoring threats out there, especially, you know, in crunch time situations, as you saw tonight as well. You know, like when he went to the bench, you know, in foul trouble, it's kind of hard for Gonzaga to get the ball rolling and score. Earlier, his draft stock was around, you know, 15 to 14, and then after this tournament, it went up to about the 11 or 10 range where the Sacramento Kings could potentially pick him up, which I would like personally. So that's my first guy who benefited from the NCAA tournament. He definitely got enough playing time, definitely got a lot of spotlight, he definitely got the shine. And it's kind of cool to see a guy from Vegas come out, you know, from Bishop Gorman, to go out there and be on the national level and actually do something rather than just go out there and, you know, fail like some of these guys have in the past. So that was my first. And then second, it has to be Jordan Bell, power forward from Oregon. He wasn't really on too many people's radars before the tournament. He was kind of like maybe slipping to the second round. Some teams were looking at him, but definitely after a couple games there, what actually got them into the Elite Eight, he was definitely the factor in that. He was kind of playing like a Tristan Thompson role. He's not too much of an interior scorer. Can't really shoot too well. It's kind of an iffy jump shot, but he's definitely that high flyer. He definitely can go in there, get a block shot, go and get a rebound, and he can go in there and definitely bring up the overall energy for the team. So, you know, his draft stock right now is lurking. It was lurking around the upper level of like the upper tier of the second round, around the 33rd or 35th pick, and then now since Oregon went into the Elite Eight and then to the Final Four, he actually bumped his way up into the first round right now. So they have him projected to go 29th in the first round right now, which obviously that does wonders for someone's career if they get drafted in the first round rather than the second round. That's actually, you know, a big, big jump for some of these guys, especially pride-wise. So, you know, I mean, shout out to him. He went out there, made a name for himself, got his draft stock up. That's exactly what some of these guys intended to do, as I said on my last podcast. You know, some people go out there and say, you know, what does the NCAA tournament do for some of these guys that are lurking around, you know, being drafted? Some of them aren't going to be drafted. You know, it actually means a lot because, you know, some of these guys, they'll, you know, that might be the last game that they potentially will ever play. I know he's not a senior, but some of those guys, you know, they go out on the floor, you know, even if they're not a senior, they have this crazy year. And, you know, they sometimes say, okay, I'm going to stay in college for another year. And we saw what happened with Melo, with Melo Trimble. He was supposed to go, you know, middle of the first round, and then, you know, he had a, you know, up and down year this year. And then now we have all these guards coming into the draft this year, and there's no room for him. He's essentially just fallen off the draft boards. So that's just one example for instance. And then so now you see a guy like Jordan Bell working his way up. You know, that's a difference between some guys, you know, going to play in the D League or going to play overseas. It's just, you know, that spotlight, that four games in the tournament where they're on national TV, where all the scouts are looking, where all the agents are looking. And definitely NBA teams are looking too, because, you know, why not look at the biggest tournament of the year in basketball? So big shout out to him. Third is Justin Jackson. It's kind of funny. I joke around with my friends about him. He kind of has that Matt Barnes build. If you ever see him play, he walks around like he's Matt Barnes. He has that shoulder structure, kind of shoots like him as well, but definitely a way better shooter than Matt Barnes. And this is where, you know, this is where North Carolina excelled. It was the I think it was the Final Four game. You know, it was basically like a shootout. And tonight, obviously, North Carolina wasn't shooting the three as well as they have been in the past. But Justin Jackson really showed that he can shoot the ball at the NBA level. He's a catch and shoot guy. He can catch the ball off the dribble. He can, you know, pump fake, you know, dribble one time, pull up for the jump shot. He's definitely not one dimensional, which is which is great from all these NBA scouts. You know, they don't want to see a guy who can just, you know, just catch the ball and shoot in a corner, or, you know, maybe catch the ball and dribble and drive a little bit. Actually, you know, this tournament showed me and a lot of other people that he is a first round pick. You know, he has some improving to do, obviously, but he is a first round pick. He can go out there and definitely contribute to a successful team. Like, say, for instance, if, you know, like the Spurs were to pick him up, or the Warriors, you know, he's that guy that can definitely hit the open shot, and he's not afraid of scoring because he's been at that level before, and he's had the proper coaching in Roy Williams at North Carolina. So, you know, that's definitely another person that definitely increased their draft stock. He was kind of floating out of the first round for a little bit there, and then ever since he had this crazy tournament run, they obviously won the championship today. So, you know, that definitely does help people's draft stocks. I couldn't have emphasized that enough. I was hearing all these things right before, you know, the tournament, and people were saying, oh, the tournament doesn't do anything. You know, obviously it does. Like, you see these three guys, you know, you see Steph Curry, like what it did to Steph. I mean, you see what happens, you know, when players are exemplified on another level. You saw like what happened to CJ McCollum too. You know, no one knew who he was really. And then he gets drafted in the first round. Now look, he's, you know, top five shooting guards in the NBA. So I just don't understand why these scouts keep in these agents keep saying, oh, you know, the draft doesn't mean, I mean, the tournament doesn't mean anything. No, it does. You gotta watch it. You gotta, you know, evaluate it. Because if these guys can play at this high level, then I'm pretty sure that they can actually work to play at a high level at the NBA, rather than a guy who doesn't, you know, who's sitting at home or is an NIT not doing really too much. So, you know, that's my notables from the NCAA tournament. I wanted to see Gonzaga win tonight, but that obviously didn't happen. But, you know, I'm happy for North Carolina. I have a lot of North Carolina friends, fans of North Carolina, so happy for them. Okay, so then I want to move on to De'Aaron Fox and Lonzo Ball. So they played each other in the Sweet 16. Obviously Kentucky won. And what surprised me is that in the midst of all this stuff that was going on with LeVar Ball, with Lonzo's dad, and him going on all these, you know, TV specials and all this stuff, and he put, you know, I thought, okay, you know, he's just doing this just to, you know, increase his big baller brand and get that stuff out there and just, you know, try to make a name for his family, and especially for his sons that aren't at the college level yet. But then, you know, you have a grown man talking about all this, you know, outrageous thing, you know, just making these comments, you know, and personally, if I was at that level, my family would probably be doing the same thing about me too, saying that I'm better than Steph Curry, I'm better than this person. You know, I understand that, because I've had to deal with that at some time in my life. But you know, it's the pressure that you put on that person. It's the pressure. It's, you know, like whether or not Lonzo says he has pressure, you know, that's baloney, because when you're 18 years old and you have, you know, you have someone that you care about going on national television, keep drilling these people, and you have everyone talking about you on your podcast, every single writer, there's no way you can shut that out. It's literally impossible to shut that out. You know, whether or not all these NBA players, like all these NBA players, they go on their phones right after the game in the locker room and they check their stats, they check tweets, they check what people talk about them. It happens in every single locker room. I saw it firsthand. I see it all the time. You know, they're not just so objective to everything that they don't see anything. You know, they're right there in their phones as well. You know, they're actually human. They have an iPhone. So, you know, it's very, very obvious that it hurts these players, and in particular, I feel like it hurts Lonzo Ball a little bit, you know. And you know, all this stuff was you know, kind of happening around the tournament, and then he goes and plays De'Aaron Fox and the Kentucky Wildcats, and De'Aaron Fox just got the better of him, and he honestly got the better of him earlier in the season too when they played here in Las Vegas. You know, so in the Sweet 16, De'Aaron Fox had 39 points on a terrific shooting. Lonzo Ball only had 10 points on 4-10 shooting. And for the most part, they were guarding each other for the whole game. And, you know, just from my observations, Lonzo, you know, yeah, he has a great averages throughout the year. He's averaging 14.6 points, 6 rebounds, and 7.6 assists. But what does that really? But what does that really do? You know, when you're this, you know, kind of a one dimensional type of looking guy. I mean, I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to disagree with me. But just by my observations, he is kind of a ball stopper, in a sense. And you know, he doesn't know. I feel like he doesn't know the correct time where he can take over, because he's more than capable of taking over and scoring 10 points in a hurry, or, you know, five points here, 6 points there. But he doesn't read the game well enough where he can just take it over. He had so many opportunities this tournament where, you know, where he could have just went and did his own thing but the time would have been right. And then sometimes you just see him just drifting off into a corner and getting tired and just standing off and just keep running back screens and running around and let, you know, Bryce Alford out there shoot the ball like almost every single time. You know, that was what was, you know, noticeable for me. You know, yeah, he is 6'6". He has, you know, an incredible body frame, which they could definitely build at the NBA level. But, you know, I feel like scouts are actually looking at this too. They're like, okay, you know, they played each other twice this year, De'Aaron Fox and Lonzo Ball. You know, Lonzo Ball plays in the Pac-12. De'Aaron Fox plays in the SEC. They're both terrific basketball conferences. This year, obviously, you had Arizona in the Pac-12 and Oregon, which made it to the Final Four. But then in the SEC, it's, you know, probably some people think it's, you know, up there. It's like, you know, either the first or second or third best conference in college basketball now. You definitely can't deny that. And then you had South Carolina go to the Final Four as well. So, you know, where do we draw the line here with the level of competition? You know, so for De'Aaron Fox, he obviously had 39 points against Lonzo Ball in the Bruins in the Sweet 16. But then earlier this year when they played at the T-Mobile Arena here in Las Vegas, which was probably the best college basketball game of the year. Until the tournament, probably, but De'Aaron Fox had 20 points in that game, and Lonzo Ball had 14 points. But Lonzo was 2 for 8 from three. That's just another big concern. You know, he was one for eight when they played in the Sweet 16 as well from three. So, you know, I don't know if it's like the limelight, or if it's the spotlight, or if it's, you know, another NBA caliber type player playing against each other. But he definitely didn't live up to the expectations that, you know, his dad obviously set, and most of, you know, and all of his fans and all these people that are so high on him. I just don't get it. You know, especially in the NBA draft, it's like a coin toss. You never really know. You know, you might find a guy in the middle of the first round, draft him, and that guy might be your future star for the next, you know, 5 or 6 years. you know, you could draft a guy that's number one pick and he could be your, you know, star for the next 5 or 6 years. But, you know, it's kind of a gamble. It doesn't matter where they fall, to be honest with you. It's all about, you know, is the proper scouting done? And it's from a character standpoint as well. I mean, I know he's very standoffish and, you know, very, you know, respectable and humble. But when you see a guy like his dad, you know that mentality's in the back of his head. That, you know, I'm the best, I'm this, I'm that. And trust me, I get it. But like for you to go out there and do that after your dad puts you on a pedestal, of course you got that pressure on your back. Of course you do. Of course you have that person talking in your ear saying, you know, if you don't do well, you know what your dad said about you. You know, that's exactly what people are thinking. And then you got Fox on the other hand. He averaged 16.6 points this year, 4 rebounds, and 4.6 assists. You know, it's not the best numbers. Well, I mean, it's really great to be a top 5 pick, but he also played with Malik Monk. And Malik Monk's another NBA level player. You know, he's another top 10 pick. And that's what, you know, that's another thing that scouts are going to look for as well. You take two NBA caliber guys, you have them on the same team. They're both starting with each other. Malik Monk averaged, I think, 19 points this year. So it's very easy to see that these guys, that Fox is able to play at an NBA level with another NBA level ready guy. And Malik Monk's a shooter. De'Aaron Fox is a facilitator and can drive to the basket. What De'Aaron Fox reminds me of, though, is kind of a skinnier John Wall. Like when John Wall came out, John Wall was very, you know, athletic, could get to the basket whenever, can take the mid-range shot, but he really couldn't shoot the three as well. And I mean, I'm not going to say that De'Aaron Fox is a great three-point shooter, but he's better, you know, he's better than some players. But when he gets to the NBA level, I guarantee they're going to work on that with him. But it's very easy. It was just so obvious to see his poise and just to see the way he can dribble the ball up the court and construct his offense rather than Lonzo Ball did in the tournament. And I feel like that was a big red flag when these people are trying to draft Lonzo, is that if he can't, you know, produce against, you know, De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk, I don't know if he can be a franchise caliber player like right now. There was so much hype around him, and I just had to throw this out there just to let people know that, you know, he's not on his high horse. He's not this great player. He's a great player, but he's not going to be this player that everyone thinks he is right now. And there's definitely better value in drafting Fox. Fox could come in right now. I don't know if he could start, but if he gets drafted by, he's going to go top 5, obviously. Either the Magic, Suns, you know, Knicks. But I mean, if the Suns were going to get the third pick, I guarantee you a lot of Suns fans would want De'Aaron Fox right now, because you got a ball stopper kind of in Devin Booker, and you want a point guard to facilitate the ball to him every single time. You want a point guard to, you know his role, get his baskets, but obviously find, you know who the best player on that team is. See, like you can go through this with almost every team. So if you were the Lakers and you wanted to pick either Lonzo Ball or Markelle Fultz, you know, the Lakers would probably obviously pick Lonzo Ball because he's an LA kid. It's better for PR for them as well. So, you know, and you can just go down the line. Phoenix, of course, they would take De'Aaron Fox. And then you go to Orlando. They have nothing going for them. So they'd probably draft Lonzo Ball because they have this, you know, they need the good PR for them because no one wants to go play for them. And then you have the New York Knicks. I guarantee they probably would not take Lonzo Ball. They probably would take De'Aaron Fox because they don't need that negative limelight on them anymore. And they already got Kristaps Porzingis and their, you know, future star for that team. So I don't feel like drafting him would do anything. Definitely you need a guy who can just, you know, facilitate the ball and be a team player. So, you know, you can just go down the line right there and you can just make your own judgment. But from what I'm seeing and from what I'm seeing character wise and from the outside looking in, if that type of stuff is going on in his household, you know, with all that LeVar Ball, you know, media stuff, you know, I just don't see a kid that's mentally focused, I would say right now. You can beg to disagree, but I'm probably 100%, not 100%, probably like 90% sure that that drafting De'Aaron Fox over him would definitely be a better short-term decision for right now. If you're a team trying to see where your team's trying to be at within the next couple of years, and you know, in the NBA right now, you want to get like a little sample size of what your team is about to be within the next 2 to 3 years, so you can say, okay, do I need to chalk this up, or do I need to go pick new people, or do I need to go draft accordingly to the guys I have on my roster, or do I need to just go, you know what, we need to go pick up some free agents or some big time players. And I feel like if you're trying to get a dose of what that's trying to be of a player that can definitely do that right now, it's De'Aaron Fox. So that's my rant on him. And I'll move away from NCAA basketball for just a little bit, and I'm going to go into the NBA. So Harden and Westbrook, I've seen a lot of, you know, I've definitely been watching the NCAA tournament more than I have watching NBA the last couple of weeks. I've been doing a lot of draft and analysis on these NCAA players. So, but I've been keeping tabs on both of these guys, and obviously they're both having remarkable seasons. James Harden still doesn't play defense. Westbrook is, you know, doing the impossible. 40 triple-doubles, one triple-double away from tying Oscar Robertson. And I believe he has 5 games left to break the record. So I'm pretty sure it's going to happen. You know, first player to average a triple-double since then, hopefully. You know, 31.9 points, 10.4 rebounds, and 10.4 assists and 10.6 rebounds a game. And the Oklahoma City Thunder are playing Milwaukee on Tuesday night, so go and check that out to see him tie the record. So, you know, it's been a big debate this year, obviously, who's gonna win it. And people are saying, okay, well, you know, Oscar Robertson, back when he averaged a triple double and he had the 41 triple double season, he was the one who won MVP. And I'm like, okay, are you playing in the NBA now? Because you see. Because, you know, Oscar Robertson was definitely like either one or, you know, either the first or second best player in the NBA at that time, right? And you look at the NBA right now, you know, either James Harden or in Russell Westbrook, they're not either, they're probably the fifth and sixth best player in the NBA right now. And, you know, obviously the best two players in the NBA right now are LeBron James and Kawhi Leonard. That's not even up for debate. They're the best all-around players. And I have Steph and Kevin Durant in a different little bracket off to the side. They'll probably be 3 and 4 because they, you know, it's kind of funny. They like go in sections. You got the best two in the NBA, James and Kawhi Leonard, and then you got Steph Curry and you got Kevin Durant. Those guys are obviously the best two scorers in the NBA. But then you got James Harden and Russell Westbrook. They're both the, you know, they're right there with the best scorers, or the best, obviously, because, you know, Westbrook's probably going to have the scoring title this year. But those guys are on a different level, you know, just with team-wise, for instance, you know, because they are the MVPs based on their team. Because you know, if LeBron wanted to, LeBron could win MVP every single year. He's definitely in the top three or top four discussions every single year. You know why? Because he's the best player in the NBA. He can do anything. He's the ultimate leader. He's the ultimate assist guy. He can score whenever he wants. No one can guard him still. That's just how he is. Kawhi Leonard, you know, he can go out there and, you know, obviously guard positions 1 through 5, shoot the ball now with efficiency, can run the fast break. Popovich likes to use him in, you know, clutch situations. So, you know, those guys have the best well-rounded games. And then Curry, obviously, you know, him and Kevin Durant are on a team where, you know, it's team basketball. It's fun. It's, you know, up and down the court, up tempo, shooting threes, you know, steals, behind the back passes, all that jazz, because all those guys on the team can score and do it with ease. But then James Harden and Russell Westbrook, you take those guys off their team, where are they? Where is that team going? You know? And I'm very glad that the MVP race has basically narrowed it down to them, because they're on teams right now where, you know, if Harden wasn't on that team, I don't know where they would be at, especially with without Russell Westbrook. I guarantee you the Thunder wouldn't even be in the playoffs. 100% guarantee you that. And you know, it's it's just something to think about that, at this level of the NBA this year there has been so many records broken. There has been, so many different things that have been happening. But you see how different the game has changed. These guys back when Oscar Robertson was doing had averaged a triple double, those guys were so lanky and not as athletic as these guys now. If you were to just take, a roster of those five guys, pair them against, or a roster of these five guys, it's very, very noticeable of their physical and athletic differences. You just can't shy away from that. So with this whole comparison that, these triple doubles don't mean anything because, Oscar Robertson didn't win MVP, that's bogus. Especially in today's game, if you average a triple double throughout the whole season and you break that record and you're on a team where if they take you off that team, you're not a playoff team, you got to give that guy the MVP. And I don't care if wins mean something, but wins mean more if you take that guy off the team and there's no more wins to be there. That's very obvious. If you take James Harden off the Rockets, I guarantee the Rockets still make the playoffs, maybe a seventh or eighth seed, but they still make the playoffs. They have a roster that is built to make the playoffs regardless. And they have players that are on there to run and gun with Mike D'Antoni's offense. And obviously James Harden fits in perfectly with what D'Antoni's trying to do. But it's a different game now. The level of play is so much more different. You just got to respect that and hand it over to a well-deserving Westbrook. This probably won't be done for, I mean, who knows? Maybe he could do it again next year. But, it probably won't be done, soon. I'm being optimistic. Maybe it'll happen, in the near future because he's still in the NBA. He's playing at a high level. But it's kind of hard to do that again, obviously. Oscar Robertson didn't do that, again. He didn't break his record. So, you got to give it to Russell Westbrook. You got to. There's so many, high level elite guys in the NBA now where it's almost impossible not to. There's so many more, why nots to Russell Westbrook than whys to James Harden at this point. It's these people with the votes have to take that into account. And the people in the media have to take that into account as well, because these media people are going to get votes for this too, and they've seen this day in and day out. They see the level of effort Westbrook puts in. They see that if they take him off the team, they won't be good. You can just see when they take Russell Westbrook out of a single game for a little bit that they just drop off just a little bit. They might go down by 10. They might go down by 13, 14. But then you put Westbrook back in, starts climbing up. He gets his teammates involved, gets to the basket, gets fouled. That's the type of guy he is. Yeah, James Harden can score with efficiency, but that doesn't matter when you got power. That doesn't matter when you have the mindset that you're the greatest, and you are the greatest in the NBA this year. That's being taken away from the game right now a little bit. You want to have that Mamba mentality that Kobe had, that saying, that no one could stop you. And at sometimes, you don't see James Harden with that attitude. So Russell Westbrook, definitely the fan favorite. I hope he wins MVP. If I had a vote, I would definitely vote for him. Okay, so we're gonna move on from that topic. I'm gonna go to the NBA draft for just a little bit, and that'll be our closing topic for today. So the NBA draft, the Celtics are more than likely going to have the first pick. They're going to receive the pick from the Brooklyn Nets. They have the first pick, and from projection, it shows that Josh Jackson will be the number one pick now after the tournament. Honestly, I like it. I like Josh Jackson to the Celtics because the Celtics don't need a point guard. They got Isaiah Thomas, which could be their point guard of the future. Even though this is a point guard riddled first round right here, I definitely think that Josh Jackson would be the best fit. You need a shooting guard. You need a guy who can put the ball in the basket and not a facilitator. You have a Terry Rozier coming off the bench, which for the Celtics, they actually like him. They're actually trying to give him more playing time and build him up. So, You know, they already have that working there, so they need a high caliber wing scorer, because you know you heard all these things happening around the NBA trade deadline this year where they were going to get Paul George. You know, they're looking at Jimmy Butler. You know, so they're obviously looking at a shooting guard or small forward. So them drafting a point guard wouldn't do too much for their roster. I definitely see now, you know, it's a lot more clear that Josh Jackson probably will be the number one pick, just because of his size. He's a scoring wing, can get to the basket with ease, he can shoot the three. He's not afraid to put the ball on the ground. So, and then especially with the great coaching there, it's definitely not a bad pickup for them. So I'm glad that the Celtics held on to the pick, but obviously when it gets closer to draft night, they obviously might trade that pick away for Paul George or a Jimmy Butler. You never know. But you know, I like where their mind's at, because I was kind of like surprised if they were going to draft like a Markelle Fultz or Lonzo Ball, because that probably wouldn't do too much for that team. But you know, you have a guy who's going to come in and do a little bit of scoring, play good defense, and contribute to what is already first place in the East team. You know, maybe that can, you know, adds a different level of, you know, maybe that can, you know, put you guys up on that tier where, you know, if he develops in two or three more years, that could put you over the Cavs. That people are going to be building rosters to beat you rather than you have to beat a roster to beat the Cavs. And that's obviously where everyone's trying to get to in the Eastern Conference this year and in the future, because, you know, LeBron's going to stay there for the rest of his career, hopefully. And obviously Kyrie, Kevin Love. So you need to combat that with scoring, because scoring is what's going to get you above them. So I have Josh Jackson going there first round, or if they don't trade their pick, obviously. And then so that's it for Celtics talk. I'm going into the Kings talk now. The Kings are going to be they have two picks in the first round. Hopefully the New Orleans Pelicans keep losing these last couple games so they can stay in the top 10, hopefully. They're going to probably end up with a pick around like the 6th or 7th spot, and then another pick around the 9th or 10th spot. And with those picks, you know, the best available for the 7th pick, it's going to be Frank Ntilikina. I probably butchered his name. He's from France. He's 17 years old, and he's 6'5", 190. He's a point guard. Which, you know, a lot of people, they get skeptical about drafting foreign players, but I've watched a lot of video on this guy. I've seen him play a couple times. This guy's the real deal, I think. If you're a Sacramento Kings team, what do you got to lose? What do you got to lose drafting somebody like this? You already took the plunge on Papa Giannis. You know, you went out and got your scorer and your future, you know, star guy in Buddy Hield. So work that guy up. You know, Scalabissier is obviously going to be a good player in the next couple of years. He's so young. And then you got Willie Cauley-Stein. He's still developing. You saw this year, he definitely took his game to the next level. Can go out there and rebound. Floats around the basket with ease. He's definitely going to be a better offensive Tristan Thompson in the next 5 to 10 years. So look out for him. But then the Kings really don't have a point guard that they're building up from their system. They don't have this young guy that's, you know, that they're actually, you know, in and out of practice every single day. They don't have a coach in their ear. So I need, you know, if we were to draft this Frank guy from France, I feel like this will definitely, you know, be a good thing for the Kings. A lot of Kings fans probably don't like that, but this will definitely set them apart as far as, you know, as like a farm type of thing, because, you know, they're not developing any point guards right now. They have Ty Lawson, Darren Collison. Darren Collison's great and all, but you know, what are you going to do when these young guys grow up as, like, you know, Willie Cauley-Stein, Scalabissier? You need a point guard of the future. That wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, or you got Dennis Smith on the other hand from NC State. He's 6'2", 195. You know, he was a sensational scorer this year for NC State. When it comes to the NBA draft, you just never know. You never know. So, you know, why not take the plunge on a Frank Ntilikina guy coming from France and see where that takes you? And he's only 17 years old. There's so much more room to obviously grow and basically improve on. And, you know, foreign players specifically, they have this, you know, touch to their game. They're more offensive minded. You know, they're more stable on defense. They're well rounded, because over there they preach, you know, defense. They preach passing. They preach, you know, just basically all around team basketball. Yeah, the pace might be a little bit slow, but a player, you know, with great skill and athleticism could always work his way up to that. You know, if it's the opposite, then that most of the time never works out. So I like the Kings to take him to take the foreign guy from France with the you know, 6th or 7th pick. That would be a great pickup for them, I think. So the Kings are lingering around the 9th or 10th pick as well. So if they were to get, you know, they have the 2nd pick in the first round, I feel like they need to draft a scorer, you know, a scorer at this draft, at this spot, and hopefully Malik Monk is still available from Kentucky. I love this guy. He reminds me of a Jamal Crawford, you know, almost identical. He can catch the ball wherever, put the ball in the basket. He's a flat out scorer. He doesn't, you know, he can create on his own. He can play a little bit of point guard. It's kind of, you know, you don't have to worry about him dribbling the ball, which is a good thing. He can take the ball to the basket, high flyer. That definitely would not be a bad pickup. It wouldn't be a bad pickup if they were to take him at the 6th or 7th spot either. So, you know, if he's still lingering around, I definitely think that the Kings should definitely take a look into him, because you can have a great, you know, if, you know, Buddy Hield goes to the bench, you can move Buddy Hield to the 3 for a little bit, put Malik Monk at the 2, play a little small ball, you never know. I feel like that could work out very, 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 very well, and he's only a freshman, so you could work him up through the system. That would be also a great pickup. And also, the guy I talked about earlier is Zach Collins. Obviously, he had a great tournament. The Kings are flourished with big man right now, but if he's available, I feel like you got to take him. I feel like you got to take him. This guy has it in him. I guarantee you, this guy does. You just gotta put a little bit of work into him, put a little bit of weight on his bones, and this guy has skill. This guy's a great, you know, back to the basket player. He has great skill. He can turn around and, you know, do that great, you know, wing move that DeMarcus Cousins has used very, very well in the past. He has that same move. You know, I feel like he's, you know, he goes after loose balls. He's a high energy guy, being 7 foot and 230 pounds. So if he's still available, I guarantee the Kings should take a look at him as well. So that's all I got to talk about today, guys. You know, I just wanted to give a little brief of what's been going on with the tournament, what I've thought about, and a little bit of the topics going on in the NBA right before the playoffs. So when Russell Westbrook gets his breaks Oscar Robinson's record, you can hope for another podcast coming in the near future. Hopefully that's within the next couple of days, maybe 3 days or so. So thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for hearing me talk about my analysis of the draft and players to look forward to. Hope you guys look out for my podcast coming out in the next couple of days. And hope you guys have a good rest of your week. All right, peace.